That's right, everybody. As always, thank you so much for tuning in and taking this journey inside the Black Vault with me. I'm your host, John Greenwald Jr., and today we're talking about the new film, Aerial Phenomenon. You can visit the website at www.aerialphenomenon.com. I have seen this film myself. It's incredibly well done. Tells a thought-provoking, emotional story about a 1994 event witnessed by over 60 school children. I do highly recommend you check this all out. But joining me today, stepping into the vault, is Randall Nickerson. The film's director, producer, and cinematographer. Randall, thank you so much for taking the time today and telling us about your new film.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate the work you've done. Well, in years.
Thank you for that. And I mean it when I say that the film, I highly recommend for everybody who's watching this interview, if you haven't seen it yet, to check it out. The one thing that I have to compliment you up top is the way you captured the emotional effect on those that witnessed this event. And that is something that has always spoken to me. Doesn't matter the topic of a documentary, but when you truly capture that as the cinematographer, the director, the producer, which you are of this film, my compliments to you, because that's what resonated with me, I think, more than all else. For those in my audience that aren't aware of the story, give a quick synopsis of what is this 1994 event and what happened.
It was September 16th, 1994, in the morning, 10:30. And is when things started to happen at a school, a rural private school in Zimbabwe. And there were multiple children on the playground who witnessed something set down behind, outside of the school boundaries fence, basically, which was logs, these large trees. And they saw this silver thing in the sky first, and then it came down to the ground. And then the children gathered, not all of them, but a large group of them to look at it. And then they saw these creatures getting out of it. And at least one approached the playground. And it went on for between 10 and 15 minutes, according to everybody. And then they ran screaming to the teachers who were in a staff meeting at the time.
So were there any teachers out with them, or was it just the school children playing and maybe teachers in the back, or?
There was a woman in the tuck shop, which was the, there was always adults out there because it is Africa. So there was a woman in the tuck shop. There are other people also I haven't brought up yet, because it's just too much of a story to tell, to be honest. This is the film is really a part of the story.
And it is. And like I said earlier, it really does capture that emotion. Before we get into that, I want to talk to, I'm kind of assuming maybe the emotion with you as well, but what spoke to you to do and create and produce and go out and do this film? What made you do it?
It was the children watching their interviews initially and saying, you know, just striking me like they're telling the truth. Whatever they're talking about, they're telling the truth. I could see it in their body language, their eyes. And then the further I went, the more interviews, archival interviews of more children and some of the same children with the same type of honesty, clarity about what they saw. And the more over time, the more drawings I collected, the more teachers I spoke with, the more other witnesses outside of the school that I spoke with, the more you just can't stop when I was looking for that moment of like, well, maybe this didn't happen. You know, maybe it was, there's another explanation here. And I kept looking for that. I really did. I kept getting more and more confirmation that something really extraordinary happened there. And that continues to this day from emails that I receive and more, even more witnesses that are contacting me that unfortunately aren't going to be in this film. But
So when you got into this and learned about this story, did you have any background with UFO related stories? Have you done films on this before, or was this kind of your first introduction into this topic?
No, it wasn't the first. I had seen something myself. I don't really want to talk too much about it. Drew my attention, kind of stopped my whole career in life. Just when you see something like that, it changes everything. And then I started making films. I was working actually on a film on Bud Hopkins at the time that the Ariel story came to me from the John Mack Institute. They had said, would you be interested in making a film about this? And I had to put Bud's story down and started with this.
I don't want to pry because it sounds like you don't want to talk about it much. If you don't mind me asking, this part, was your experience a sighting or was it something reminiscent to...
I could identify with the kids. Gotcha. I was 10 years old. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. And I will respect it. I'll move on from
that. It goes back to why would I do or put my heart into such a thing? Well, it's to realize that I wasn't the only person that went through that. And there's a lot. And that's what's really stunning is how widespread this, if you want to call it a phenomenon, is worldwide, all over. And what drove me was my heartfelt feelings of these people don't have a voice.
And I think you give them that in this film, and you brought up Dr. John Mack. Obviously, he has been connected to this story for quite some time, tragically has passed away. But you have footage of him, and I don't want to give away too much of the documentary, so I want you to take the lead on how much of the story you want to share. But obviously, we can tell from the trailer, at least, that you've got footage interviews from Dr. John Mack. He went out there, and it's known that he was essentially convinced at this that this was something real. Can you speak to your experience with the John Mack Institute and looking at that film footage from Dr. Mack and what his contribution was to this story?
Sure. He, it was a BBC reporter who was first on the scene that contacted Dr. Mack, and he went over there to the Ariel School and interviewed the children. He brought he was a Pulitzer Prize winning professor of psychiatry at Harvard. He was very well known, very well respected. And he was also had trained, I think he spent 20 years working with children as a psychiatrist. And so he had a lot of experience dealing with children. And he brought that experience into in the interviews at Ariel. Yeah, he contributed, and then he got attacked by Harvard right at that same time, basically. I think he's an unsung hero in a lot of ways for his stand he took, as a clinician, that he, people were trying to diagnose people that had seen these things as, you name it. Schizophrenia, false memory. I mean, they created new things just to try to explain it. And he was saying, these people are having real experiences. This is real on some level. It is real. And he stood up against the Ivy League people all over that at great cost to him, his reputation and everything. But I and others as well, but he took a very big risk, and I think we'll be reading about him and others in our history books that took that stand, especially if they're academics.
Yeah. Yeah, I had the pleasure of only meeting him once before he passed. We both lectured at the same conference, and he really was an amazing individual. You can see that he truly cared about those that he would speak with, the school children included, but he had such a passion behind what he was doing. And again, without revealing too much of your film, but you really pulled some great footage to capture that struggle that he had from the people at Harvard, to the point where I just got a little cringy that they were saying that about him. And what was interesting was that there was no skeptical explanation brought forward. And I want to kind of talk to you about that. Their kind of viewpoint was that he was kind of off his rocker, so to speak, and in doing this, and that it was all essentially a delusion, but not bringing forth any like proof of what they were saying. It's like, hey, this is too extraordinary to be true. Ergo, it's not true. And it's like when you see the Harvard people say that and talk about John Mack, it again was a very cringy moment, but very important in the film to show the struggle that he had. But I want to talk about that with you for a moment in that skeptical viewpoint. When you were doing this film, other than the obvious that the kids all came together and created this conspiracy of a story and made it all up, which I just don't see. I mean, I'm a skeptical person, I'll be honest with you, but when you have that many people, and especially in your film, showing them to this day being affected by it, I just don't see any of that as being true. But what other, if any, skeptical responses to this case have there been?
Well, due to the fact that I had something occur to myself, I felt I had to be extremely objective. And I looked, you know, I had to look at everything very carefully and was looking for the skeptical arguments, and took those skeptical arguments to professionals. One of them was mass hysteria, mass hallucination, I mean, all those. And it brought that to some Harvard psychiatrists, you know, to look at that and got their opinion, which was, that's not what's happening here.
And these are present Harvard psychiatrists?
One of them has left. The other one is still there. Yeah.
Interesting.
One of them is a professor at another university at the moment.
I understand if you can't. Can you name them? Like, did they get involved with this publicly, or was this a...
No, I hope they will get involved publicly.
Gotcha.
I really do. I think they, again, like everybody else, is concerned about their reputation. Sure. But I think that's going to change pretty soon, to be honest. So yeah, I was looking for anybody, and I was really particularly interested in, you'll see it in the film, the one teacher that thought they had made it up. So I found him and I was expecting him to hold that viewpoint, and he did not. That interview I'll share sometime down the road for sure. We just couldn't fit it in the film. By the way, our rough cut was 4 hours.
Wow.
And it was good.
I have seen comments on review sites, which are all extraordinary for your film, by the way, but I've seen quite a few requests for a director's cut. So keep that rough cut, because my guess is you'll have a lot of people that'll want to see that. But just to clarify, so you're saying a teacher back then who said, no, these kids are making it up, has kind of done a 180 on that and feels that there is something.
Well, I asked him, like, you know, I expected him to hold that opinion, and he didn't. He said I believe the kids. And then I asked him why. And he said, well, it was the consistency of the stories over time, that it didn't change year after year. He's still at the school.
Wow.
So it was really, I was lucky that he still was there, and had a lot of time to really think and see the children over time and really reflect, because it never left them. It never left the school. or anybody that is there at the school, even present day, what occurred there.
Just to close the thoughts about that skeptical viewpoint and the mass hysteria, and it seems like you dug in on that. I think where I'm going with this part of the interview is that I'll say it again. I'm a very skeptical person. And if you had a kid come forward, if my son, who's 8 years old, who just graduated from second grade, came to me with a story, I'm going to lean towards imagination or, you know, something that's very explainable. But when you have more than 60 school children and years later, you're going out, you're finding them, you're speaking to them, and their stories are consistent, and you can see, I can't stress enough that emotional response to this, even so many years later. What else is there? And I can't think of any. And I'm not trying to trap you on anything. No. I just can't think of any. And that's why I wanted to talk to you about it. Is there anything else other than that mass hysteria, which sounds like it's just really not going to be even something to consider? Anything right. else?
No. I mean, you know, there's always space debris coming in and satellite reentries. There's all kinds of things. And that was one of the initial explanations, that it was, you know, potentially something, you know, came off a satellite reentry, or, you know, and that's what the kids saw. I mean, that was one explanation, but it didn't explain, you know, any of it really. Because it didn't just fall to the, you know, nothing fell to the ground. It was all controlled. And how do you explain their interaction with these creatures? And I get it. Like, it's unbelievable, you know, yeah. for me. Still. But it doesn't matter whether I can't conceive of it, right? And I think for all of us, it's like, okay, yeah, it's really difficult to wrap our hands around it, but we can't just throw it out the door because of that. You know, there's leaps in, science and discoveries that require us to go way further than just the simplest explanation, which is usually right, but not always.
Yeah.
And particularly with this is very complex.
And that's what was silly about those Harvard, the footage that you pulled in the reels of the Harvard people, you know, just kind of slamming this topic without any evidence whatsoever, because in their mind, that only extends, you know, pretty much to here. They couldn't expand out of that. And it was a very telling look into how some of this is dealt with. And you mentioned earlier about the drawings. And I think that is something else that you captured very well in the film, was that students were creatively putting what they saw on paper. And there was a lot of parallels between what they were putting down. If you don't mind me digging in a little bit more on that, what were you seeing with these drawings? What drew you to them?
Well, initially I had, probably a dozen of them. And over time, I think I have every single one of them at this point, but it took a long time to actually get all the drawings. And every single one I got was like, you know, pointed to the witness, you know, what they saw, and the witnesses I was already speaking with, and for the most part. So drawings kept coming in year after year, and it was just so interesting because they were all from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. They saw the same thing, but it was their interpretation as a fourth grader or a second grader or a sixth grader. And it was really dependent on how artistic they were, how detailed, how well they could translate what they saw onto paper. And even if it wasn't that complex, it still said something about the experience and what they saw. That was just brilliant. That was Cynthia Hind, actually, that requested them making drawings, and the school did it. And not because of the school, but because of the parents. The school wanted it to go away. Mm-hmm. But all the kids went home and told their parents. That's what started everything. And the school couldn't ignore it at that point. And they had them all draw. Not all of them, but they had the ones they felt like They didn't do it with the younger children because of concern of their, for their mental health, so to speak. They were pretty traumatized. So there were more drawings that could have been done and more interviews that could have been done at the time, but I think it was actually probably a wise choice by the school, to be honest with you. So, the drawings were interesting for sure. I mean, it's, you know, that's why, and I'm not really a big special effects person. It's not necessary. And the drawings really are the special effects done by kids.
Yeah. You had that footage as well of the kids at the time, and you juxtaposed that with footage, I assume, that you shot for the film. But back then, if you don't mind me asking, it was that from the John Mack Institute, or where did you find those old interviews?
Oh, it was initially from John Mack, the John Mack Institute, and it was just John Mack's footage. And then when I went over to, I mean, as soon as I just found the school was still there, which was largely happened because of Nicole Carter. Mm-hmm. Then finding out she had done a story for SABC, then I found out Zimbabwe television had also done interviews. Then I found another person who had shot at the film, and it was all over time, you know. Mm-hmm. Somebody shot a week later. Well, somebody shot days later and then interviewed the kids a week later, and then a week after that, and then 2 months after that, then, you know, another 3 months, and then another year. So you had, I mean, I had so much archival, which is why I'm able to tell almost the story in real time, because of all these people that interviewed these kids. So I didn't, my shooting began in 2008. That's when I started shooting myself. But all the archival is from a lot of people. And I'm really glad those people took the time to do it. But it was such an incredible story. And if you talk to anybody, any of the media that was there, they'll tell you that those kids were, I mean, there was a reason why they got interviewed and why they even bothered to roll tape, because that was Beta SP at the time.
Yeah.
half hour tapes. And, I was really lucky to recover it all, but that also became a goal. You know, I want every single piece of tape that I can get of these kids when they were young, because that tells the story.
Yeah.
A lot of detail.
The footage of the BBC journalist, too, was powerful. I don't know why I was drawn to his interview, but good catch on that, because that was a fantastic interview. And you could just tell that he was so bewildered by it. And that one, I think, just a personal note, struck me more than I think most of the interviews, obviously aside from some of the children. But that was a great reel to see. What is the consensus around the school now, since it's still there and you went there? What is the thought process there right now?
It varies. When I was there, I mean, most people I spoke with, you know, there were several teachers still working there. There was no question about what happened. There are skeptical people, you know, that have come on to in the school here and there, and, just in general, and I understand people. It's hard. It's hard for people to believe something like that.
But a lot of the teachers that are still there, they just accept that this was a extraterrestrial encounter.
That's true. I mean, there are three or four that were there. Yeah, absolutely. And the ones I've been in contact with were not at the school anymore, but are all, you know, all around the world in different places. Yeah, they knew something profound happened at that that moment.
Again, not wanting to reveal too much of the film, but were you surprised at the emotional toll that I feel comes out in this, that the children, some of the children that were there that you interviewed present day, and again, juxtaposed that footage from back then, you can feel it. You can see that emotion. You can feel that emotion. Was that expected, or did that surprise you at all?
It just solidified. You know, still, when I walked in to interview these children as adults, I was ready for anything. You know, ready for, you know, whether they, oh, no, I made it up when I was, you know. I expected that, and I didn't expect what you're talking about, which was that it did, it's something that really touched their lives. And, you know, different people dealt with it in different ways. I see that a lot. Some people blocked it out completely, or they only want to think about it for short periods of time and they want to get back to doing things, or they've faced it head on, which is pretty rare. But it's something I've seen and talked to other people about that aren't involved with Ariel, how long it takes to actually process something like that. And it doesn't help that they're not believed, or people laugh at them, or they're called crazy. It doesn't help them. It doesn't help them heal. And I was lucky to, I really feel honored that, like, a lot of these students allowed me to tell their story. You know, it was a risk for every single one of them. And I just honor them for their contribution in a way to our future.
Yeah.
As a student.
My compliments to you for capturing that, because it does come through. And I think a lot of people that are those hardcore debunkers and skeptics, I call myself skeptical. I am. But you know, there's a very, for me, distinct line of sensitivity here when people experience something like this. And I just really, it's not something that I focus on, because you get into some very sensitive territory. But I think a lot of people that, again, are those hardcore skeptics and debunkers, they forget that there's humans that are on the other side of these stories, that you can throw out all of the, you know, skeptical explanations you want. It's mass hysteria, it's delusion, they're crazy, they were on drugs, you know, whatever. And again, not to this specific case, but in generality, they forget. And I think that's what this film captures, is the human toll of an experience like this. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like you believe that they had an extraterrestrial encounter after you've done this film and based on your experience?
Yes. And it's details, actually. A lot of it's not in the film because nobody would get it because they're so specific. But it was observations that they made that really convinced me. There's no way they could have known those things at that period in time, because it just wasn't even, I mean, still, it's still not really widely known at all. You know, the simplest explanation, going back to skeptics, I don't want to spend too much time, because what I've found is most skeptics don't do the research.
Yeah.
To even know what they're talking about. And then, you know, and they go by the simplest explanation. Well, that's true in 90% of the time. I agree with that. And I'm a very objective person. I work, you know, my dad was a mechanic. I grew up working on cars. Things, if it wasn't in my hands and I couldn't turn a wrench to it, or what, it didn't exist. Do you know what I mean? If I couldn't have my hands on it,
sure,
work on it physically, and then I get into electricity, just, you know, and we can't see that, really. Most of the time we don't see it, but it's still there. And when you get nailed by 220 or 440 volts, you know it's real.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the simplest explanation is 90% right, but not with this
stuff.
Not
all the time.
And I think, you know, skeptics got to really, I don't know. The skeptics have gotten, they've gone downhill over time. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious who's going to step up this time and try to, you know, debunk this or whatever. But I'm really not that concerned because I was ready for that in the beginning.
Yeah. And again, that's what has struck me about it, not only after seeing your film, but even prior, that for, I've been around the block for a long time in this field. I've known about the case. I've never really dug into it myself, but knew enough to know that there really wasn't a whole lot of skeptics throwing bombs at it going, nah, it's this, it's that, it's whatever, because there are so many aspects to supporting what had happened. And you brought up some stuff that you said was not in the film. Do you mind if I ask what those points and details were from the kids that maybe resonated with you? Do you mind if I ask that?
I kind of want to keep them quiet because they're so specific. And John Mack did the same because they're kind of key to knowing. They're just very specific things that tell you that it's the same thing, mm-hmm. right? And John, he had kept those quiet. So did Bud Hopkins and others. They kept these little details because that really told you who was authentic. Because you can't. It's so out of the, you know, it's out of the. It's just very specific, out of the normal realm. I just don't think it'd be good to share that stuff at this point.
I understand. Are these details, if you don't mind me asking this, details found outside of the aerial event, meaning other cases from other parts? That's what you mean. Okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
I'm not trying to be secretive or anything.
No, I
asked really good questions and they're very poignant and I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, and I can appreciate what you're trying to shield as well. I mean, totally on board with you there. Going back to the drawings, one thing we haven't talked about yet was the actual extraterrestrials that were seen by multiple children. And not every drawing that I saw in the film had them, but quite a few of them did, right?
Yes.
So what percentage would you say of the drawings that you got were the kids, did they see these beings? The half, all of them?
No, it wasn't all of them. One of the things people have to understand, I think, is how large the playground is. It's mm-hmm. enormous. And there were two playing fields, one very close to this object that came down. And the other one was actually on about 15 feet elevated, and it was surrounded by trees. So people on that field, if they were, they probably didn't see what the other people did. I mean, there was a swimming pool. It must have been 500 yards away from the site. It's a long ways away. It's a huge campus. It's almost like a college campus. It's that big. So when you take that into account, and finding out where people were on the playground or the different playgrounds, because there was a playground for the little kids and then there was the soccer field and the other soccer field or football, they call it, of course. And then the swimming area. And I mean, it's enormous. And so when I placed people where they were, it made a lot of sense. The people that were closest to it had seen that. Those creatures. Yep.
I'll let you take the lead here. According to the children, whatever you're comfortable sharing without blowing the entire documentary, what did they experience when those that saw the creatures, what did they experience?
Some form of communication, mind to mind communication. I don't know what else to say about that. That's in researching all the other reports and you know, because I really had to do a wide ranging look at it the whole phenomenon. That's common. That's part of this phenomenon, is that mind-to-mind communication.
Yeah, and in 1994, for those, I don't know what number of kids describe that telepathic communication, but what are the odds that kids like that would make up that type of a detail? You know what I mean? Like that to me was something that stuck out as well, where it's like, you know, kids are going to be kids if that was something to look at of either a mass delusion or whatever, their imagination. But they were so specific in those older interviews that were shot, that you showed in the film, of mind-to-mind communication. Those are some pretty powerful words, you know, and I think that's something that really doesn't resonate today about this event. I mean, for those that dive into this field, if they're lucky enough to, you know, see your documentary, they'll become acquainted with it. But most out there don't. And that leads into my next question for you is, why don't you think that this is part of a bigger conversation where you do have, not only with Dr. John Mack, but others as well, Harvard-level psychiatrists, ones that are qualified to talk to somebody and say, okay, look, they may think that they saw this, but XYZ, their qualifications are not paving the way for any type of explanation other than these kids experience something. So why isn't this part of a bigger conversation this day and age?
Well, I think we're in the process of that changing right now. I think it's been a worldview problem, you know, back to Copernicus and Galileo, the same kind of thing where we, especially in our more educated professors and that field and other fields where people have studied forever and have multiple doctorate degrees, they're pretty stuck on this is the way it is. You know, this is the truth. This is all there is. And yes, there's this and this and this, but aliens are really a disturbing worldview shift to think that there's possibly something way far more intelligent than us out there is disturbing on a lot of levels. And Dr. John Mack and others have spoken about this. I'm not the first one to say this by any means. And that it's kind of like a global ego blow, which I heard John say, to humanity. And it's something we're going to have to get over so we can make progress and realize it's kind of, you know, we're going to have to have some humility, you know, if we're going to grow and come to terms with the fact that there is other life out there. If they've gotten here, they're far ahead of us, far, far ahead of us.
You had mentioned the conversation is changing in that regard. Do you feel that humanity is ready to accept incidents like the aerial case, like others that may be similar, although I can't really think of ones that are near this type of a case, but obviously encounters and so on. Do you think the world and humanity is ready at this point?
The younger generation is for sure. What's that saying? Ideas, great ideas die when professors die. I'm not able to quote it, but it's so no, right okay. on. So the older generation, I think, is going to have a more difficult time because of their mindset, but the younger generations have grown up with this, hearing about this, seeing movies that aren't even close to the reality, but you know, they're much more open and they want to know. And they also see that we need to grow and they want to know the truth. So I think we're going to do okay about it as long as we don't think it's a threat Like, I mean, I think we, not that I know what the answer is to that. We do need to know what their intentions are. Why are they here? You know, what's their intentions? Again, others have said it. I think if they were here for, we would not be here. You know, considering the technology that they seem to wield.
Do you think religion will play a role in this? It came up in the film a little bit. You can attribute it to this case and beyond. So how do you feel that that will play a role moving forward?
Well, I think the Catholic Church and, you know, the major religions have pretty much realized that this was going to be coming down the pike quite a long time ago, back in the 90s and even currently. So they've opened the door for that, which is good, because so it's inclusive, you know, that we're not the only creatures here. I'm sure it's been a concern for a long time, from the powers that be. Religion has been a very big concern, but I think it'll smooth out, because of what the actions by, the Catholic Church and other religions to, I mean, NASA just brought them in for a, sure you're aware of that.
Yeah.
I think that was a really good idea. Cause they need to be on, they need to be, brought on board to themselves, religions, to understand, like, okay, well, what does this mean if we bring this into the picture?
As I kind of close the interview with you here at the end of my time, I want to ask you, what is the one message that somebody sits down, they watch your film, what's the one message that you want them to come away with?
That this is something we need to address, that it's real. These creatures or whatever they are, it's going on worldwide, all over the place. Ariel is one incident. There are many, 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 many more, and just as riveting. And this is something we need to, we need to find out as much as possible. Any piece of data is important about these things to understand what they are, and why they are here. We'll get to where they're from down the road, but we need to know for our own species survival, you know, to know, because they can decide our fate. I don't think we're necessarily in a lot of trouble, but who knows? We can't approach them uneducated. We need to know as much as possible and get down to the brass tacks, and that means everybody. And we're seeing it. We're seeing the military, we're seeing, you know, NASA, we're seeing everybody finally knowing, like, okay, these things are here. And then, they're not saying what they are, of course, but we know, they know that these are not another foreign country or anything like that. So we need to address it, and I hope people who have been through this, who have seen them, can have a little bit of a break. You know, people like, and people that have been talking about this, researching it, like yourself,
mm-hmm.
can get a little bit of a break and be taken seriously. 'Cause there's been so many people over the years, year after year, decade after decade, coming forward at great risk to themselves, their reputations, their friends, their families. They've lost a lot, you know, and the day is here pretty soon that everybody will be taken seriously on a different level.
I know I said last one, but if I can squeeze in one more.
Sure.
After everything you've experienced with this film and beyond, you talked about intention and figuring out intention. Do you personally, if I can ask, have a guess on what that intention may be I won't hold you to it, but maybe
My personal opinion, I think they're looking at us as a biosphere. Like, we're a rare gem, slightly rare gem. There's others probably, likely, all over the universe, but we're not that common. And so, not just our species, the entire planet is important. And if we were those scientists traveling around the universe, we would likely want to preserve those as much as possible. You know, if you put yourself in their shoes, and we do the same thing with creatures on our planet below us that we study, that we tag and track and try to tame. And, you know, we're always doing it. And we're always discovering new species on our planet, our own planet. So it's just they're, in my opinion, they're on a much bigger scale. And planets are like zoos to them. I kind of feel personally like they're more zoologists in a way, and scientists as well. And they're also pilots, just by the way. You know, but their perspective actually makes sense if you look at us and how we treat other forms of wildlife and try to preserve other forms of wildlife through different methods that we, you know, culling, different things that we try to keep the species safer. I'm not saying culling in any negative way at all, like for what they're doing. I have no idea really. In the wide scope, but yeah, that's how I feel. That's my personal opinion. It may be correct. It may not be. But it makes sense from what I've seen and heard in that perspective.
Well, it's a great, great way to close, for my audience, just to give one last, tidbit about the film, in that what I just asked Randall, some of the kids expressed what message they received from these beings. And it's pretty fascinating. I'm not going to blow that part of the film, because I think you need to see the progression up into that point. So I invite everybody who is watching this interview, I hope you do go. It is well worth it to watch Aerial Phenomenon. Randall, let me have you give the details. How can they find the film? Watch it. How do they do that?
Right now, you can go to aerialphenomenon.com. You can see the trailer there. You can rent the film there. And likely in the next couple months, it's going to go much wider, because I really want everybody on the planet to see this. It's not for money or fame or any of that. It's just to get us all on the same page, or at least open the doorway so we can all start having a conversation.
Yeah. It's a great conversation to have, and it was an honor to have you here. And again, that's www.aerielphenomenon.com. I have that right, Randall?
You got it.
Perfect. All right. I wanted to make sure. Randall, thank you again.
Pleasure.
Very, very much for a great conversation. Well done with the film. I do, like I said, encourage everybody to see it. I hope everybody's watching will. So Randall, thank you very much for your time today. And thank you all for watching and listening. Make sure you click up on the thumbs up button. Make sure you subscribe to the channel if you're watching on YouTube. And just know all of these interviews go to the podcast as well. Whatever podcast platform you have, just search for the Black Vault Radio, and you will find me there as well. Randall, thank you again. Thank you all for listening and watching. This is John Greenwald Jr. signing off, and we'll see you next time.